Chapter 29. Reflections on the zeal of the early Christians. Two men come to a perilous resolve. Walls have ears, particularly sacred walls. Whoever regards the early history of Christianity will perceive how necessary to its triumph was that fierce spirit of zeal, which, fearing no danger, accepting no compromise, inspired its champions and sustained its martyrs. In a dominant church, the genius of intolerance betrays its cause. In a weak and persecuted church, the same genius mainly supports. It was necessary to scorn, to loathe, to abhor the creeds of other men, in order to conquer the temptations which they presented. It was necessary rigidly to believe, not only that the gospel was the true faith, but the sole true faith that saved, in order to nerve the disciple to the austerity of its doctrine, and to encourage him to the sacred and perilous chivalry of converting the polytheist and the heathen. The sectarian sternness which confined virtue and heaven to a chosen few, which saw demons in other gods, and the penalties of hell in other religions, made the believer naturally anxious to convert all to whom he felt the ties of human affection. And the circle thus traced by benevolence to man was yet more widened by a desire for the glory of God. It was for the honor of the Christian faith that the Christian boldly forced its tenets upon the skepticism of some, the repugnance of others, the sage contempt of the philosopher, the pious shudder of the people. His very intolerance supplied him with his fittest instruments of success, and the soft heathen began at last to imagine there must indeed be something holy in a zeal wholly foreign to his experience, which stopped at no obstacle, dreaded no danger, and even at the torture, or on the scaffold, referred a dispute far other than the calm differences of speculative philosophy to the tribunal of an eternal judge. It was thus that the same fervor which made the churchman of the Middle Age a bigot without mercy, made the Christian of the early days a hero without fear. Of these more fiery, daring, and earnest natures, not the least ardent was Olynthus. No sooner had apostates been received by the rites of baptism into the bosom of the church than the Nazarene hastened to make him conscious of the impossibility to retain the office and robes of priesthood. He could not, it was evident, profess to worship God and continue even outwardly to honor the idolatrous altars of the fiend. Nor was this all. The sanguine and impetuous mind of Olynthus beheld in the power of apostates the means of divulging to the deluded people the juggling mysteries of the oracular Isis. He thought heaven had sent this instrument of his design in order to disabuse the eyes of the crowd, and prepare the way, perchance, for the conversion of a whole city. He did not hesitate, then, to appeal to all the new-kindled enthusiasm of apostates, to arouse his courage, and to stimulate his zeal. They met, according to previous agreement, the evening after the baptism of apostates, in the grove of Cybele, which we have before described. At the next solemn consultation of the oracle, apostrophe said Olynthus, as he proceeded in the warmth of his address, "Advance yourself to the railing, proclaim aloud to the people the deception they endure, invite them to enter, to be themselves the witness of the gross, but artful mechanism of imposture thou hast described to me. Fear not, the Lord, who protected Daniel, shall protect thee. We, the community of Christians, will be amongst the crowd. We will urge on the shrinking. And in the first flush of the popular indignation and shame, I myself, upon those very altars, will plant the palm branch typical of the gospel, and to my tongue shall descend the rushing spirit of the living God." Apostrophe, apostrophe, heated and excited as he was, this suggestion was not unpleasing to apostates. He was rejoiced at so early an opportunity of distinguishing his faith in his new sect, and to his holier feelings were added those of a vindictive loathing at the imposition he had himself suffered, and a desire to avenge it. and that sanguine and elastic overbound of obstacles the rashness necessary to all who undertake venturous and lofty actions. Neither Olynthus nor the proselyte perceived the impediments to the success of their scheme, which might be found in the reverent superstition of the people themselves, who would probably be loth, before the sacred altars of the great Egyptian goddess, to believe even the testimony of her priest against her power. Apicites then assented to this proposal with a readiness which delighted Olynthus. They parted with the understanding that Olynthus should confer with the more important of his Christian brethren on his great enterprise, should receive their advice and the assurances of their support on the eventful day. It so chanced that one of the festivals of Isis was to be held on the second day after this conference. The festival proffered a ready occasion for the design. They appointed to meet once more on the next evening at the same spot, and in that meeting were finally to be settled the order and details of the disclosure for the following day. It happened that the latter part of this conference had been held near the Sacellum, or small chapel, which I have described in the early part of this work, and so soon as the forms of the Christian and the priest had disappeared from the grove, a dark and ungainly figure emerged from behind the chapel. I have tracked you with some effect, my brother Flamen, apostrophe soliloquized the eavesdropper. You, the priest of Isis, have not for mere idle discussion conferred with this gloomy Christian. Alas! That I could not hear all your precious plot. Enough! I find, at least, that you meditate revealing the sacred mysteries, and that tomorrow you meet again at this place to plan the how and the when. May Osiris sharpen my ears then, to detect the whole of your unheard of audacity. When I have learned more, I must confer at once with Arbaces. We will frustrate you, my friends, deep as you think yourselves. At present, my breast is a locked treasury of your secret. Apostrophe, thus muttering, Calenus, for it was he, wrapped his robe round him, and strode thoughtfully homeward. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.